Good afternoon and welcome to Central Coast Voices, a program addressing the ramifications of change and how today's choices will affect tomorrow's community. This program is an extension and production of Action for Healthy Communities and provided in collaboration with KCBX. It's made possible by underwriting through Joan Geller Sargent. I'm your host, Chris Kington Barker. Composed of a series of monologues and scenes, Teen Monologues is based on interviews and surveys from local teens and teen parents. Originally written and performed in 2003, Teen Monologues has since grown into an annual collaboration that builds on over a decade of teen stories. Directed by the renowned John Bandolino, Teen Monologues gives space for teens to speak about topics affecting their everyday lives, including healthy dating relationships, coming out, supporting friends through depression, communicating with parents, and the social pressures to have sex. Today, I'll be talking with this powerful teen theater outreach project and some people who know a lot about it. And my guests are Sophia Longus, health educator with CAPSLO, or the Community Action Partnership of San Luis Obispo County, Inc., and their youth programs, peer health educator and Teen Monologue cast member, Lolly Tolan, or is it Tolan?
Tolan.
And MFA, who's a staff member with CAPSLO youth programs also, correct? And you too can join our discussion by adding your comments and your questions today. And the way that you can do that is by calling us at 805-781-3875. Again, 805-781-3875. And thank you, all three of you, for being here today. I'm really excited to talk about this. When I saw this was going to be my show, I thought Fred can't do this one. So tell me a little bit about, first I want to talk about CAPSLO's teen programs. They've been in existence for quite a while. And talk a little bit about what kind of services for teens are being offered.
Sure, yeah. CAPSLO Youth Programs has been around for about 40 years in many different forms. And we're part of our health and prevention division. So what we offer directly out of our office is program and education around supporting teens' health and well-being. So we provide comprehensive sex education in the high schools from Santa Maria all the way up to Paso. Mm-hmm. We also provide Project Teen Health, which is one-on-one nutrition coaching and after-school workouts and mentoring for youth around their health and fitness goals. And then there's also the Center for Health and Prevention, which provides comprehensive reproductive health services for men, women, and teens. And they have two main centers, one in Aurora Grande and one in SLO.
Okay, great. And when you're talking about this kind of a program, did this grow out of a particular program for teens, the Teen Monologues?
It did, yes. Yeah. So we had an education component, a classroom education component for a number of years, but we were finding that we were missing some of the real teen voices in the curriculum that we were offering. So there were a lot of statistics that were shared, but they were missing that honest and authentic portrayal. So the project came as a partnership between the adult staff and some of the youth on the leadership team. They said, we need to go and we need to listen to the people in our county and gather these teen voices. And it actually started focused on teen pregnancy prevention. So the first year, cast members went and interviewed teen parents in the county and wrote down their stories and their experiences. And the original Teen Monologues was actually called Teen Momologues. And so it was reflecting those experiences of pregnant and parenting teens in the county. And since then, it's evolved and grown and really shifted to be more comprehensive of a lot of different health topics and topics that are facing teens today.
What was found when the shift occurred from adults making decisions about what to talk about to having input directly from the teens about what was important for them to have a dialogue about?
I think a difference that happens is that there's a peer-to-peer connection that happens, mm-hmm. so between cast members and then the teens that get to see the show, either through like school shows that we go and perform at or in our community shows. So teens get to meet each other and hear each other speak on these things. So that's kind of bridges that gap instead of being like an authority in the classroom and talking about these things.
Right.
It brings like teenagers together. And then also it allows other adults in the community to hear what teens have to say.
It kind of becomes more their story, right?
Oh, completely.
Yeah. Lolly, were you interviewed for the monologues?
I was not necessarily interviewed. It was more of like a group meeting and collaboration activity kind of thing. So we'd meet after school on some days and get together and have brainstorming processes for skits or poems or songs or anything that we wanted included in the show. So there are a lot of original components from me and the other teens who were involved in that sort of back and forth process.
What was that like for you, Lolly, in terms of just the experience of that, having those kinds of discussions or the kind of topics that would come up? Did it feel awkward or?
It was a little at first because it's something that as teens we don't get asked about and that nobody really brings up. And it's almost stigmatized against to not talk about it at all.
Oh, that's interesting.
So yeah. Being in this environment where I could share what I was going through or any of the questions I had, whether it be like sex related or like anxiety and things like that, it was just a really cool experience to have someone who not only felt like they cared, but also who I could feel comfortable talking to.
Could you say anything? I mean, was it pretty much I could say anything and it would be accepted?
Definitely, yeah.
Oh, okay. And was this co-ed?
Yes.
Oh, it was. Okay. Okay.
Yeah, so 17 years ago when the project started, it was about interviewing teen parents. But now, as Emma said, it's evolved a lot. And so the process has changed. There's less interviewing and more like brainstorming relevant topics. And then what we did this year is a long series of like different meetings to do creative writing and figuring out how to write skits. And we had workshops and stuff like that. So yeah, it was less interviewing and more having them create their own content. And what's special about this year is something that we haven't really done in the past. And it's that the actual performers on stage are reciting, most of them are reciting their own pieces that they've wrote themselves. Oh. So the whole show is completely student written. And Emma and I and a couple of other people on our team have really just been the guide. So they're really driving the ship and we're just kind of the lighthouse.
So is it, is the show, it changes then each year?
Yeah.
So a person could go back for decades and you'd see a completely different show.
Yeah, because each year there's different things that come up, right? Like social media is now big, whereas before it wasn't something that had been talked about in the show. So as things change in our culture and in our community, that comes up in the show because it remains relevant.
What's, I want to add, I find this a little humor, sorry, that my year back in 2007, big technological change is we added a cell phone call into the script. It was called the phone call and it was using a cell phone and that was monumental at the time, right? And that would no longer be relevant to, you know, kind of celebrate, whoa, they're talking on the phone call.
Right.
And so now, like Sophia mentioned, we have vlogging in the show and just different references to what's relevant now.
Sure. So, yeah. And for you, have you been involved with it since 2007, since you were a participant as a teen, or did you have a break?
I had a break. I went away to college during that time, so I was not involved in the show during that time, but I have been coordinating on the project for the last 7 years, so I feel very close to the project, and my sister was also involved in it, so I've seen almost every year of Teen Monologue since its inception.
Okay, so you're hearing the voice of Emma, and Emma, what have you seen in the evolution that's happened with the students from the time that, because you started 4 years after this process began, so it evolved, but it was in early stages. What do you think has really shifted for teens today from teens in the earlier days? What are you sensing? What do you feel?
Wow, that's a really big question. I think there's a lot on teens' plates these days, and I think there's even more than I perceived that was on mine at the time. I think teens are coming to us feeling and sharing a lot about the stresses around academic pressure and then dealing with anxiety and trying to manage that and cope with that as they're trying to be successful in the academic settings. Something I think is similar is the disconnect between adults and young people. I think there's a similar sense that I wish I could talk to adults about this, but I feel like I would get in trouble. And I think that has mm-hmm. kind of echoed throughout all the years that I've seen the show and been involved.
Mm-hmm. So that's the consistent thread.
That's my perception, mm-hmm. yes.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the goal of the project, is to create this space and this forum and using theater as a platform for us as adults to really listen and mm-hmm. let the youth take the forefront and share what's going on, and then hopefully spark conversations to mm-hmm. say, hey, it's okay to listen. It's okay to talk about these things. And how can we continue those conversations? And like you said, create community change.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And Lolly, you've been involved in the show how many years?
This is actually my first year.
It's your first year. Okay. So this is really a new experience for you.
Yes.
And why did you get involved in it?
So my friend, who's also in the show, Mira, she was on the radio show yesterday that they did, but I followed her to one of the meetings because I had nothing to do after school that day, and I got hooked, essentially. I really enjoyed it, and it felt like a really welcoming and comfortable environment, and I continued to keep coming back, and now I'm part of the show.
That's great. What about that experience felt so welcoming to you?
Oh, man, got to think back.
Was it different than in some way through other kinds of situations that you've been a newbie at?
Yes. It was kind of like a really like free brainstorming process mm-hmm. idea. I think the first meeting I went to, it was just like a group of students and adults sitting around a table talking and planning out this kind of distant show that will somehow form in the future and now has formed. But it was like a combination of like everyone like making jokes and laughing, as well as like progress being made and people coming up with really cool ideas. And it would be like someone would say an idea and everybody would be like, whoa, oh my gosh, like that's so cool. and then people like throwing back and forth ideas and building off of them.
Yeah. Now, in your background, do you have drama experience in your background?
So I'm a senior right now.
You're a senior.
And I did acting theater in 7th and 8th grade. Mm-hmm. But then when I got to freshman year, I decided that I was done with theater. But then got fished back into it for technical theater. So stage management, lights, sound, the people who
you
run
went
around
behind
to do
the
props.
Scene.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I've been doing that since freshman year. And this is the first time I have acted since middle school, other than doing improv with the local troupe.
So you really took a risk on this. Yeah. Yeah, that's fantastic.
We casted Lolly as the narrator just because of her energy, and I thought that she had been an actress forever because of how she spoke and how she acted. And so I casted her as a narrator and then found out weeks later that she actually hasn't been in theater since 8th grade. But she is doing an amazing job as the narrator. So I'm really excited to have her on stage.
Yeah, it's fantastic. We have a call from Simon here. Hi, Simon.
Hi, this is Simon from Arroyo Grande.
It's good to hear your voice, Simon. Are you calling with a comment or a question?
Yeah, I have a question. I have a lot of experience working with high schoolers, but I'm curious to know, what do you think our additional support teams need but have difficulty accessing?
That's a great question, and thank you for asking. I definitely want to defer to Lolly on this one, but I think, honestly, some supports that teens have identified to us through this process is more spaces like this that are inclusive and affirming and just open for them to share their thoughts and opinions. I think having access to wellness centers on campus where they can have a space to really decompress or talk to a counselor or have some kind of group processing on campus is a really great idea, and I know some campuses locally are pursuing that, like Atascadero and possibly New Tech High as well. But Lolly, what do you think?
Kind of the two biggest ones that I've either personally experienced or personally seen are one, somewhere where teens can go to talk about like anxiety or mental things that they're experiencing, because sometimes it can be difficult for teens to talk to like teachers and things mm-hmm. related to school about that kind of topic. For fear of being like looked down on in class or being treated differently. So then it kind of pushes them away from wanting to talk to them. And the same thing can happen with parents. Either the, no, we're raising you well, it's just like a stressful week, or not listening or believing to what the teen has to say. And then another one would be somewhere to go to talk about, like, friendship and relationship issues. Because friends fight, couples fight. Like, there are a lot of difficult situations that teens are put in, and we don't get the experience to that often. So when we are faced with that kind of situation, it's kind of a, I don't know who to go to, and I don't know what I'm doing. So having somewhere that they could feel comfortable talking about some of the more personal, interpersonal relationships they're having would be a good first step.
Yeah, great. You get all that, Simon?
Yeah, that's incredible. Thanks so much for sharing.
Okay. Thanks for calling.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye. So with kids, that what is the age range of the youth that are involved in this? Is there a span of ages?
There's a span of ages. We have, typically it's high school involvement, so around 14 to 18.
Okay.
We've had some stellar middle schoolers participate as well before, so we've had a range of 12 to 19 before, so it's kind of in the teen years.
And what has been the response of the parents? Do the parents come and see these shows when the students are in these shows?
Absolutely. Parents come, they support, and they're often very proud of the people that are in the show. Often, some of our teens are, this is their first time in theater, so they've never acted before, they've never been a part of theater, and so for the adults to come and see their teen up on stage so poised, so confident, and being so sometimes vulnerable, right, on stage and sharing that with a full audience, it's a really empowering and powerful moment for the actor and also for their family. Mm-hmm. And we, like we said, we hope it sparks those conversations. So we hope that a parent brings maybe the younger siblings or another teen in the family, and they can start to talk about some of the topics that are presented in the show.
I also want to add just to the other side of that, though. I think in the past years, there are sometimes cast members who might not feel safe inviting their parents. Mm-hmm. And that does happen, too.
Yeah. And so do they not invite their parents?
Yeah, sometimes that
happens.
Yeah,
and that would make sense. Yeah. That would absolutely make sense. Mm-hmm. Sure.
We did have a submission this year as well that the young person isn't out to their family, but they really wanted their piece shared in the show. So we do have an anonymous submission that's going to be performed this year by
someone else.
By someone else.
Yeah. No, that makes absolute sense. Lolly, you were wanting to say something.
Yeah, so the show hasn't been shown to family or public community members yet. But my mom got a hold of the script the other day, and she said
those
she
moms.
Read. She was telling me about how she had read the first couple of pages, and she thought it was so funny. Just the whole like intro scene. She is really excited to see the performance.
Oh, good. What do you see happening with young people like Lolly who go through this experience? I mean, here's Lolly who walked in because she didn't have something to do that day and got hooked, was the word that she used, you know, and pulled from having decided at some point for some reason to go behind the scenes, you know, and we'll talk about that later, but and come back in front of it. And what do you see when you see these kids?
Well, personally, I've been working with this group of 11 students quite a bit. And we actually have some students from Santa Maria High School.
I saw that. This is the first time, right?
This is the first year that we are reaching all the way out there. And it's really great because some of those students have never acted either, and they were really interested in just trying something new is what they shared with me. And so it's been an amazing transformation to see some of those students who were so shy the first day that I was meeting with them to even, I challenged them to say certain sexual fluids out loud just to get them comfortable with like the topic.
Oh, that'll make anybody comfortable.
And, you know, as opposed to like theater kids who could shout that at the top of their lungs, but these students couldn't look me in the eyes or like say that out loud. And now seeing them on stage, performing their monologues that they wrote themselves, memorizing it, saying it confidently, and being told by our director that they have a career in this later. So it's a really special transformation.
Yeah.
And Emma and I were both in the show back in the day. And now
back
we,
in the day.
Back in the day. And now we both work in with the project. So I think it does not only empower you, but then also can lead to this kind of work.
Are the leaders that are part of this, have you gotten younger than the leaders were when it was 2003?
Yes, I think so. My perception of age when I was young was like, oh, everyone's really old.
But it would make sense to me that that would be part of the evolution of having the dialogues and making it more comfortable with the young people.
Yeah, we are close, but the change is huge, right? So from I couldn't speak to the experience of being in high school now, and that's why we always draw on the youth voice. And throughout the project, they've always collected a writing team so that youth really were putting input for the script. I think what makes this year so special is that the performers are performing their own story. So it's just one more degree of closeness with the information that's being shared.
You're listening to Central Coast Voices on KCBX, your radio station, your public radio station, from Salinas to Ventura, and streaming on the web at kcbx.org. I'm your host, Chris Kington Barker, and the voices that you hear with me today are Sophia Longas, health educator with Community Action Partnership of San Luis Obispo County, and that's CAPSLO. She's with the youth programs. Also with youth programs is Emma Faye, staff member, and we have with us today a peer health educator and teen monologue cast member, Lolly Tolan. Today's show is live, and we welcome you to participate in our discussions with your thoughts and comments and ideas and questions. You can do that by calling us at 805-781-3875. Again, that's 805-781-3875. And we have a call from Jessica. Hi, Jessica.
Hi.
Hi, did you have a comment or a question? Or
I just had a quick question. Okay. I'm just kind of curious, like, what are some of the barriers that teens are kind of facing when they're trying to have those honest conversations with maybe their parents or any other adults about sex or just about their health in general?
Good question.
The barriers to talking about health and sex, right, Jessica?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I had kind of brought one up before of more towards mental health, but almost getting shot down or told that the teen is making it up or over-exaggerating. And the parent often, in like a parent-child situation, the parents can sometimes resort to the impression that the teen is blaming them for what they're experiencing, which isn't the case. Teens can be going through a lot of stress at school with friends, relationships, or family, but it's oftentimes more of the teen and they need someone to help them deal with what they're going through, not the parent doing a bad job at parenting.
Mm. Sometimes, Lolly, does it feel like when you're in that position of talking with a parent and they're coming from a place of defending themselves, does it feel like it's your job to make them feel better and you have to step out of the role of being the person with the issue that's trying to get us
kind
some
of
comfort?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It kind of gives me the want to not persist anymore in the topic.
Mm-hmm.
So it almost feels like a door closing and it's just like a shutdown.
Yeah.
We talk about that a lot with parent and youth conversation, are those door openers, right? Can you tell me more about that? Or if you're watching a show together, well, what do you think about that relationship between the two characters? And then that's the parent's cue to listen, right? And to let the young person talk about their opinions, even if the parent is having feelings about that or reactions, to really give the space and the microphone over to the young person. And so finding those teachable moments, which come up often throughout our everyday life, especially when we're consuming media or amongst maybe their peer group or friend group, it's important to ask those questions and listen. And I think the other thing we see with the parents is the desire to talk to their young person. They really want to. they need a little support with that. So they need to some help in normalizing that, yes, you can start that conversation, and that it's not just one conversation. It's a series of a lot of conversations, because it's the other misconception is parents think, oh, we talked about it that one time. Check. Done. Got it. But we're really encouraging that people are having these open, honest conversations, talking early and often around sexual health, healthy relationships, dating norms, identity, and mental health.
Yeah.
And when we're in the sex ed classroom teaching sex ed, I often ask students, like, do you talk to your parents about sex? And a lot of them say no, like, oh, no, it's too embarrassing. And then I ask them, like, how could you make it easier for your parents to talk to you about
what kind of answers do you get?
They say that a lot of times they think, like, if I act less squeamish, or if I just sit down and try to act mature and, like, listen, then that's their idea of making it easier for their parents to talk to them.
Mm-hmm.
But it's understandable that it's uncomfortable.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. It wouldn't be who I would choose to talk to.
Right.
Yeah. 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 Did that answer your question, Jessica? I think. Okay.
We'll take that as a yes. Hopefully.
When you're talking about your part of this, does it feel different to act when you're acting and you're saying words that are coming from you rather than reading a script? Because you said you were involved in acting before, and there you're reading a script that somebody else has written about, maybe their own experience or maybe a story that they've made up about something else. So this is your story, right?
It's definitely all of our stories.
Yeah.
All the 11 of us who are involved in the project.
Yeah.
As well as the facilitators who are helping out with it too. But it definitely is different. It gives me, when I'm performing it, the feeling of the ability to take it in whatever direction I want.
Mm-hmm.
When you're reading a script or memorizing lines written by someone else, you tend to jump onto that. Like, these need to be performed exactly how they were meant to be written. But with this script, I can go, and as I'm saying it on stage, I'll forget a line and make one up and say, no, I liked that way better. And then I'll change it for how I do it in the future. So it's constantly like a building and improving kind of system.
Yeah. So you ad lib in it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, I love that.
Yeah, we tell our students to, like, if they forget something, to just, they know what their own story is.
It's their story, right?
So they can just move forward with what message they're trying to get across.
And that's what's so cool about live theater. It's you can never put on the same show twice, because the people in the audience are going to be different, and what's coming out of the actors is going to be slightly different every single time. And that's what's so special and really magical about putting on a live theater show and being a part of an audience there, is you're getting that up close and really personal exchange and experience.
Now, how long do these 11 students work together on a project like this?
The project is about 10 months. So we start in the fall writing and spend quite a bit of time writing and shaping the show. And then they've been rehearsing since, February now. So rehearsing a couple times a week. We rehearse sometimes at the Slow Rep Theater, and we're working with director John Badalino. So he's providing his guidance and shaping for the vision of the show.
And so this show takes place at the Slow Rep Theater.
It does. We're having a community performance on Tuesday, May 14th. So next Tuesday at 7 p.m. at the Slow Rep Theater.
And how long is the show?
The show runs about an hour. To come early, doors open at 6:30 for a dessert reception, and you can see some of the art and some of the original stories. We're going to display kind of the process and timeline of the piece,
uh-huh.
so you can see the behind the scenes, and then the show will run from 7 to 8, and then afterwards we do encourage people to kind of stick around and mingle and share their impressions of the project and how it impacted them.
Tickets are $10, either at the door or can be bought online.
And how is a project like this funded?
So we are funded currently through a grant through the Office of Adolescent Health. They're a federal agency under Health and Human Services. And so we have a grant from them for a five-year cycle to provide comprehensive sex education and then community mobilization efforts. And so Teen Monologues is one of those ways in which we're hoping to mobilize the community to create change around the norms around teen health.
Have you seen, now that you've incorporated some of the students from Santa Maria, it's really cool because you've got students all the way from Paso to Santa Maria. Have you seen that there's some kind of energy between bringing those communities together? Because that's not a natural communities coming together necessarily all the time.
Yeah, that was a really important part of this year's project. And the four students that we do have from Santa Maria are Latina and different identities, and they bring a piece to the show where they get to talk about oppression and race more. Yeah. So that's really exciting for us. And I don't know, Lolly, what would you say about like working with the Santa Maria crew? And like if there's a different energy from
where
like
do you
the
go
San
to school,
Luis Obispo
Lolly?
County.
I go to school at Central Coast New Tech, which is in Napomo. I don't know. I don't know if I'd say there's a different energy. I don't have a hard time making friends because I have that really bubbly and outgoing personality. So I will just talk and
to anybody.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I don't know. They definitely have like a different humor in like the minor things that they like say and do. And I was getting to know them a lot more yesterday, and it was really fun to just like get that more alone time with them because it's usually a big group, but we had broken off to rehearse a scene, and it was really fun to get to know them on that like one-on-one scale.
So there is the discussion about race in in this show.
Yeah.
And has there been this discussion before in other shows?
Not as much. We've always had the Latina perspective represented because that's a large part of our Central Coast community.
Right.
But I think not to this level. And I don't think we've necessarily addressed race as directly as we are this year. So I'm excited to bring that out to the community. And I think, you know, we're mirroring dialogues that are happening on the national level. So I think that's reflected and people are experiencing that in their own ways here on the Central Coast.
You know, along with that, too, with the things that are happening in schools, you know, like some of the shootings that are going on and some of just the politics in general and the things that are happening with people just feeling like our culture's getting angrier. Is that starting to spill over to you guys as young people, or is that something that adults are holding for right now?
I don't know. I would definitely say that like teens need to be listened to more, not necessarily about like themselves or issues that they're facing, but like a lot of us have a lot of good ideas. And there aren't many people who listen to what we're saying. It's, oh, you're too young to understand, or like, you're just a kid. But at my school specifically, we do a lot of really interesting projects. And there are ones about like reforming some things that schools do, or like making different things more inclusive. And so it's a really like pulling from outside organizations and things to build on how things are being done. And so it's a really cool experience to see when someone creates a project about how we could make something more eco-friendly or make the learning style better for the majority of teens, and then they get a grade and it's done and nothing gets built on that and it never improves.
Yeah, so it's not taken anywhere. It just became like a project and that's it.
Yeah.
Yeah, when it could have been something that was built on.
Definitely.
Yeah, interesting. Is the environment something that's addressed in any of the monologues?
The environment in...
In terms of concerns about the environment?
There's monologues that touch on discrimination and sexism. But during our focus groups more, we talked a lot about how we feel in our own community and what they witness in their community, and feelings of safety or lack thereof, and other topics that were different than San Luis Obispo County's topics that were addressed by the teens in San Luis Obispo. But yeah, I think the most important part was the fact that we were already going to do a Santa Maria show and a San Luis Obispo show, but the teens in Santa Maria specifically asked to merge with the San Luis Obispo group because verbatim their words were, "I want to get to know other communities and other people in another community." So it's been a really beautiful process.
And we're excited this year to have a community performance in Santa Maria. So
you're going to have one there,
yes,
too?
Yes, so at the Santa Maria Civic Theater, which is a beautiful little theater, and it's all volunteer run. So they have a real heart for this work, and they're generously hosting our show on Friday, May 24th, also at 7 p.m. And the Fund for Santa Barbara provided the funding for the Santa Maria component of the project. So we're very grateful for them to really have that eye for creating change in their community and being able to sponsor the participation of the Santa Maria youth.
Fantastic. I'm Chris Kington Barker, and you're listening to Central Coast Voices on KCBX HD1 San Luis Obispo, KNBX HD1 San Ardo, and KSBX Santa Barbara. Our discussion today is about Teen Monologues, a series of monologues and scenes based on interviews and surveys from local teens and teen parents. It was originally written and performed in 2003 and has grown into an annual collection that builds over a decade of teen stories. My guests for today's show are Sophia Longus, health educator with CAPSLO Youth Programs, Emma Fay, staff member with Youth Programs with CAPSLO, and peer educator, health educator, and Teen Monologue cast member Lolly Tolan is here. We welcome you to be a part of today's conversation as well. And if you have a comment or question, we'd love for you to call in and be a part of our discussion. You can do that by calling us at 805-781-3875. Again, that's 805-781-3875. If you've seen Teen Monologues, love to hear from you too and get your take on what that experience was like for you. Did your parents see it when
yes,
you were in it?
They did. And like I mentioned, my older sister was in it. So she has seen the show so many times and she loves it, and she's come back with the new cast, and so she's really gotten to reflect on the evolution. But it was a really powerful experience when we saw the show together and I was a teen, because it did spark a conversation between us. And so the show really acted in my life to spark these healthy conversations. And so it's really remarkable, and it's such an honor to be a part of it now as an adult staff member.
Was there something in, was it your monologue? Was it your personal monologue that you were reading or that you were doing when you were doing the show? And was there any kind of epiphany that your mother had from that, or something that, you know, sparked something that was like, wow, I didn't get that until just now, that came out of the show?
That's a great question. I need a moment to reflect on that.
Okay.
Give me a moment to think
about
that.
Yeah, give you a moment. Have you heard that back from parents who've seen the show, that they've had just a moment where something is really like, oh my gosh, you know, I've been struck with, they've been saying that, and I just have never snapped to it before.
Well, this is my first year working on the project, and so it'll be my first year seeing the parents' response. But I will say that when Emma was performing in it, she wasn't reading her own monologue. It was like a story that was written by other people.
Okay.
So that's... yeah, in the past, there was a writing team of teens and then an acting group of teens.
Yeah.
And this year, like we said, it's all in one, right?
But even with that, I would think that parents would be listening to some of the monologues, and then something would trigger something, a conversation that sounded like one that they had with their own kid.
Mm-hmm.
That would go, oh. I've had that experience with my kid where I see some discussion that's happening on television and I go, oh my gosh. You know, boy, did she, wait a minute, I missed that same thing.
We used to have parents involved in the show as well. We don't this year, but there used to be a split scene of a young person talking to their parent and having an open and warm conversation. And then on the other half of the stage is another young person talking to their parent and feeling really shut down. And so I think that served to illustrate to parents, well, what are the things that I can be saying and asking that will further this conversation, and what are the things that maybe will kind of
turn them away. To be able to demonstrate the difference.
Absolutely. Yeah. And then we also have had a piece with a mom talking to her daughter about when it's time to get a checkup and what the young person could talk to their doctor about, right? Because some youth won't go to their parents, and that's okay, but we do want to help direct them to other trusted adults like medical professionals that they could be asking about birth control or when they're talking about when they're ready to be sexually active or not. So it's really important that we turn to other community supports as well, in addition to parents.
What's been the overall goal of the teen monologues, and has it changed through the years, or has it kind of remained the same? What was the goal when it started?
I think the goal when it started was really focused on teen pregnancy prevention, mm-hmm. And demonstrating that and illustrating that. And so I think the goal has evolved. I think it's at the center, it has always been to focus on youth voice. And I think that has stayed true mm-hmm. to the heart of the project. But I think now we're focused more on overall teen health and providing them this growth and empowerment opportunity to share that out to the community.
And so right now it's less about a focus on an act, mm-hmm. right, or healthy choices about an act, mm-hmm. and it's more about also voice and healthy choices and life choices, mm-hmm. just generally.
And identity, yeah. right, and what okay. it means to, okay. as a young person, understand your own identity and begin to try to communicate that to the world around
you. Because you are talking about people coming out,
gender mm-hmm. identity, mm-hmm. so many different aspects of identity, really. And so it's just an important place because identity is fluid. And I think right. as a teen, especially, there's this time of recognizing your own identity, honing in on the language of how to communicate that, and being able to share it out. And based on the reactions when you're sharing this information, if someone reacts poorly or is hostile even, that can really impact someone's own growth and their own safety in sharing
yeah.
from their heart. So we try to create that safe environment for people to be
Lolly,
able to
do you find that with the other 10 individuals that you've been through this going on 10-month journey with, that there's been an evolving in terms of your own, each of you, how your willingness to be open to one another, accepting of things that are different than you, or maybe understanding, have a higher understanding of something that maybe you didn't understand about other people that are unlike you?
Definitely. I have people in the show who are my best friend, like Mira, and then I have people who I've never talked to before, the Santa Maria group, and some of the slow group, too. But I give one of the cast members rides home regularly, mm-hmm. and after the rehearsals, it's a 30-minute drive, and we just talk, mm-hmm. And it'll be answering questions that one of us might understand more than the other.
Yeah.
And so it is a really cool, like, learning experience. Yeah. Him being trans, I get to, like, learn more about that and how he feels with our school system and with parents and guardians and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's a really cool.
Yeah.
And Lolly, also maybe speak on how you are now someone who is a viable resource for transportation for, like, sexual health as well. How students are relying on you sometimes to maybe get rides to the center.
Yeah. So I'm 18, so I can drive, and I have non-provisional license, and I'll have friends who come up to me and ask if I can take them to the center to go get birth control or mm-hmm. STI testing or anything like that, or if I can go with them, or, like, they'll ask me how they can make the call to make an appointment and things like that. And so it feels really good for me because yeah. I'm, like, giving my peers and my friends and students who I might have never talked to, and they feel comfortable enough to come up to me and ask me for something that is pretty personal to them.
Mm-hmm. Had you had the opportunity before these last 10 months to have dialogue and have a closer relationship with someone who was trans to be able to ask questions or to be able to understand more about the personal challenges that they were having?
Kind of, but not as much. I mm-hmm. have a few friends who are trans, either male or female.
Mm-hmm.
And so I have been exposed to that, and I do understand it to an extent.
Mm-hmm.
But being able to work with someone and right. be around them constantly,
yeah,
and have kind of this open environment too, where we're on a closer level and we're alone in a car for 30 minutes, it gives us that really, like, safe personal environment to be able to talk about that kind of thing. And and we both feel comfortable having the exchanges and getting to inform the other of the situations or things we're dealing with.
Yeah. Do you think there's anything to the fact, too, that these are individuals, these are 11 young people that are spending time orally interfacing with one another in terms of having dialogue? They're not texting one another. They're not, you know, they're not emailing one another. They're really spending time intimately and listening to and being able to see the impact of what their statements are or what their questions are. Do you think that has value?
Yeah, we not only do rehearsals during these 10 months, mm-hmm. but what we've also done is had meetings where we explore our identities and our voices. So we do different activities that will encourage each person to explore their identity and parts of their identity that they feel ashamed of, and then share that with the group. And then they get to validate the other students who also are ashamed maybe of the same things. And so we've done a lot of activities and like building trust with each other through things like that, and watching them read their like personal pieces out loud and how they console each other during the process as well. Yeah, it's really interesting.
And for those exercises, is the point of those exercises to make it easier for them to feel safe?
Yes.
When they're performing on stage, especially since they're performing themselves.
To get to know themselves and one another mm-hmm. as well. And just mm-hmm. to show that it's a safe space, like even us as facilitators, like we're there to provide the safe space and not be an authority really in it. We're on their side.
And yeah.
To kind of build off of that, also to show each other that we are going through some of the same things, mm-hmm. but also we're experiencing different things that mm-hmm. someone else might not have thought of. So that's also one of the reasons why we do activities like that, is to open up and kind of break down the boundaries of, oh, I'm the only one experiencing this.
Yeah.
But then see that there are three other people in our group of 11 who are also going through that same thing.
Yeah, or some variation of it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And at the end of a lot of our meetings, we would have a compliment circle. So these students, who a lot of them started off as strangers to each other, are giving each other like shout outs and compliments for vulnerability in those moments, or for whatever, for the pieces one wrote or something mm-hmm. like that. Yes.
The word authenticity keeps coming to mind for me, and it feels like what people are doing is living with more authenticity here. And that's, you know, how often do you get to experience that from people? Yeah.
Yeah, it's powerful, and it builds a lot of empathy, I think. So it's creating that connection and building empathy and ultimately, hopefully, creating hope, right? Yeah. This message of hope that we can connect and share our stories.
Yeah. Let's take a call from Virginia. Hi, Virginia.
Hi.
Did you have a question or a comment?
I actually had a question.
All right.
I'm calling because I have two girls, one who is a teen and one who is quickly approaching her teen years. And so I'd really like to get Lolly's perspective on how she thinks that teens can stay healthy.
Could you elaborate a little more on what you mean by healthy?
Yeah, I guess I just know that being a teen, your life can be really busy with school and with all the other activities that you do. And I know that when you're busy, your health can kind of suffer. And so I guess I'm wondering either what you do or what message you would give to other teens about staying healthy.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's a really good question and something that might kind of get overlooked a lot of times. Time management is definitely a really big one. I'm personally very busy, and I like to do a lot of activities. And by keeping like a planner, which I use Google Calendars, because then it's on my phone, and so I can have it on the computer or on my phone, and I can have it on the go. I use that to kind of keep myself in check, and definitely making sure to schedule personal time or time when I can do the things that I use to de-stress, whether it be hanging out with friends or watching Netflix or anything like that.
So
great. Thank you so much for your perspective.
What do your kids do for their balance? Virginia?
That is an excellent question. I guess that's why I'm calling, is because I'm trying to help them maintain that balance.
Well, good luck.
Thank you.
All right. Lolly, with your performance, what do you think is the thing that, if you had to identify, is the most important for you right now? What is the thing that you really are focused on in this piece?
Yeah, there are so many different stories and perspectives and experiences that are being talked about.
Yeah,
and some of them are harder to hear than others. They can get really personal or deep or like emotional. And just remembering that these things can be talked about and that some of them can have humor involved in them, which we tried to include in the show, is a really important thing to remember. Not everything has to be a super serious conversation. If everyone involved is comfortable with that kind of thing, it can make it a lot easier to talk about.
Yeah. Do you think it's easier sometimes for people to hear the message if it's also introduced with humor?
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
Because it kind of opens them up and relaxes them as opposed to being really tense and maybe like nervous to hear.
Mm-hmm.
It gets them in that more comfortable state so that they are more perceptive and willing to listen.
So if people come to this show, what do you think they'll walk away with? I mean, it's not going to be a Debbie Downer show where everybody's going to be talking about their worst nightmares and it's all horrible. And even if it is darkness, there's on the other side of that darkness, there's the dark humor too, which can somehow be uplifting.
Yeah,
in other ways. What will people hear when they come to this show?
To touch on like the opening scene specifically, it's a lot of like silly, over-exaggerated, wacky, like character choices or movements or lines. And so just having an energy and that like humor built into the scene or the character turns it from something that's, I'm watching this really boring and hard to watch scene, to something that's funny and they can't take their eyes off of it.
If I can add to that,
yeah.
Our equation when we wrote this show was 60% humor and 40% anger.
I love it.
So just to give you an example, one of the scenes is addressing catcalling and harassment, because that was the topic that the teens wanted to talk about. But it's being presented as if it were a nature documentary. So that's where we bring in the humor. And there's also going to be, for example, like a kind of sexy phone line where someone is like calling this phone line, but it's education about healthy relationships. So
I like it.
It's edutainment, right? It's educational entertainment.
Right. And if people are coming to this show, what do you hope they walk away with?
We had four founding objectives when we started this show. So we really wanted to help people to know that they're not alone. We want people to know that they're deserving of healthy relationships. We want them to know that they can get the resources that they need. And we want them to know that they can ask for the help that they need.
Yeah, and I can end that question with a quote from one of our students. He said, "I hope that people come to the realization that the youth have a voice, that it is not to be silenced. Many believe the challenges teens face are in no way equivalent to those faced by adults. I believe problems we face as humans are problems, independent when they occur in your life."
That's great. Yeah. No, that's really wonderful. And so tell me again, we've still got a little bit of time to wrap up. I want to make sure that we're addressing everything that you want to. This show, you're wanting people who are adults, parents, students to come to this. This is for grandparents.
Yes.
You know, everybody to come to watch this. It's only $10. Mm-hmm.
We want to make it accessible for everyone.
For everyone.
It's on next Tuesday, May 14th, at the SLO Repertory Theater in San Luis Obispo.
And it starts at
7 p.m. and doors open at 6:30. Come get some free cake.
And then the Santa Maria performance will be on Friday, May 24th.
Do people need to buy tickets ahead of time, or can they?
They can buy them at my805tix.com, okay. But there will also be tickets available at the door.
Okay. And then the Santa Maria show is when?
It's on Friday, May 24th at the Santa Maria Civic Theater.
Okay.
And its showtime is 7 p.m., and there will also be a dessert reception beforehand.
And then what are some of the most important things, Lolly, that you want to get across to other kids about this? Why should they come?
It gives them an opportunity to see on stage. Oftentimes it can be hard to put thoughts or feelings into words, and so to have someone be able to like translate that,
yeah,
either in a monologue or in a skit, it can give them that, wow, that's exactly what I was feeling, but I didn't know how to word it or say it before.
Mm-hmm.
And so that can kind of be freeing or help them relate and kind of know either what they need to do as a next step to like get support or just to have a better understanding of what they're going through.
And it's important to be able to laugh at ourselves too, right?
Yes.
And to laugh at situations, because sometimes we can find our way out of a box a lot easier when we're not freaking out.
Yes, that's a quote we've been using, is that life close up is a tragedy, but zoomed out, it's a comedy.
Yes.
So finding that levity, even in challenging situations.
Lolly brought a poem that she wrote here today, if you
would
like
to read it.
Is it a quick one?
Yes. Okay, go ahead.
So we had been given this template of sentence starters, and we had to fill in the blanks.
Okay.
I am unique. My name is Lollipop. My name is not Lollipop, Lollipop, boo, Lolly. You would never guess that I know so little yet so much. Where I'm from, sex is inappropriate. Where I'm from, people say nothing about sex. The funniest thing I've heard about sex is that it isn't natural. Bodies that look like mine are different and beautiful. I think a 64-gigabyte USB drive is sexy. Inappropriate assumptions break my heart. My revolution is spreading love with the power of words and images.
I love it, Lolly. I want to thank my guest for today's show, Sophia Longus, health educator with Community Action Partnership, San Luis Obispo County Youth Programs, along with MFA, who also is with CAPSLO, and Lolly Tolan, peer health educator and Teen Monologue cast member. Next week, please join Fred Monroe and his guests as they continue to examine the homeless crisis in California and its impact on the Central Coast. They'll be talking about the Homeless Emergency Aid Program Block Grant Initiative. Central Coast Voices has been sponsored by Action for Healthy Communities and the San Luis Obispo Community Foundation in collaboration with KCBX, made possible through underwriting by Joan Geller Sargent. We welcome your questions for future shows. Send them to voices@kcbx.org. I'm Chris Kington Barker, and thank you for joining us for today's show.